The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. We're broadcasting today from our headquarters studio in Edmond, Oklahoma. And this time we're coming to you live. So if I cough or sneeze or have a panic attack or a nervous breakdown, you're all witnesses. I want to thank Brad McDonald, first of all, for filling in for me last Friday and then again on Monday. I was able to catch Monday's show while flying from Minneapolis to Oklahoma City, and we've been talking all along since KPCG started back on May 5th about just how technology makes it so easy for us to follow our favorite radio station. Here I was 30,000 feet above the surface of the earth and able to get on the internet and to listen to KPCG.fm. We'll give you some more stats on the TuneIn app and SoundCloud and all these other things that we've been talking about in recent weeks. I believe the TuneIn app now has 324 followers, and we're also seeing an uptick in the plays on SoundCloud as well. Send us your feedback to td@kpcg.fm. We may fine-tune this so well that we're able to receive an email and actually read it on the program live on the air. I just want to start today's show by giving you a few stats on the Key of David program in the UK. I talked about the new station that we added just this past Saturday, and Saturday morning I was in Rhode Island, received a text from the UK about the World Held Captive program where we offered Mystery of the Ages. And the initial ring-in response, it came in at 36 people, I think, that called. But what was pretty exciting was that the trickle of callers and texters that continued through the day, by the end of Saturday, we had 72 people respond to this new station on our first week. And then, of course, the following day, Sunday, the same program played on CBS Reality, the station that we've been on for 6 months. And we received another 101 responses on Sunday. And here again, the responses have trickled in since that time. Monday, we had 21 more people respond. And then yesterday, Tuesday, six more, bringing our total to about 200 requests for literature. And those requests, as I say, were for Mystery of the Ages. And so it gives us our biggest record by far. The record, I believe, was a couple of months ago, the Real Spirit World program, one we offered Mystery of the Ages on as well. But we had 127 people call in for the book on that program. Of course, it helps having the extra station. But that gives us a pretty good measuring stick now to work from, 200 responses. Next week, we'll be offering the Russia and China booklet, Russia and China in Prophecy. And then the week after that, we'll be spotlighting the United States and Britain in Prophecy. So we'll certainly keep you updated on these developments in the UK. Well, today's a pretty big day for 144 teenagers descending upon Edmond from all over the world. They're coming from the UK. They're coming from Europe, from Australia, from New Zealand, from Peru. I saw a young lady yesterday visiting us for the camp, coming from Peru. Lots of people from Canada, of course, here in the United States. But this is their first day of summer camp. And if I'm counting right, I believe this is our 22nd summer of Philadelphia youth camps. And so today, young people, as I say, from all over the world will be arriving here at our headquarters campus in Edmond. For the next 3 weeks, they'll be having the time of their lives. And, of course, this is a tradition. It goes back much further than just these 22 summers that we've sponsored, the Philadelphia youth camps, during Herbert Armstrong's ministry back in the 1960s and 70s and 80s. the camps that he had all over the world. I mean, he had several camps in the United States. He had them in Australia and the Philippines, Scotland, and we have several as well, not quite as many as he did. But we also have summer camps in Australia and the Philippines. In any event, back then it was called the Summer Educational Program, or SEP, as we called it. I went there myself, the one in Minnesota in 1985, and then again in Big Sandy in 1986. And let me just read to you what Mr. Armstrong had to say about the importance, the significance of these youth camps. This is what he wrote back in 1983. He said, whether or not you have children ages 13 to 18, you should be much interested, even as I am. And he was 90 years old, keep in mind, when he was writing this. And he was very interested in the youth programs that the church was sponsoring. He said, you should be very interested, or should be much interested, even as I am, in the summer educational program camps for this coming summer. He says, there's no phase of God's work more important. There's no phase as important as these camps. You look at how the work grew the way that it did during Mr. Armstrong's ministry. The camp really does have an impact. The college really does have an impact. More and more, as we're preparing for our 15th year of Armstrong College, we're seeing applications coming in where applicants are talking about their many years coming to PYC, the Philadelphia Youth Camp, in the summer. We're seeing many of our PYC workers that will be serving the teenagers as they come in. Many of them went to PYC years ago, and now they're college students, and now they're helping out at the summer camp. Many of them also work for the church. Brad McDonald, by the way, sent out a tweet yesterday just talking about that program in the UK, where we had 200 people request Mystery of the Ages, and he included a picture of our mail processing center in the UK with students in there packing all of those books, 200 books, 200 Mystery of the Ages going out all across the UK and into Ireland. The students do provide quite a lot of help and support. There's students and grads working right now to help produce this program, to edit videos that we post on thetrumpet.com, to pack mail, as I said. And along the way, of course, these students have been given opportunities to travel the world, to dig in Jerusalem, to support the work in Edstone. It's pretty amazing. It benefits them, and it certainly benefits the work as well. I'll talk more about that at the end of the second segment here this morning. But I want to continue now by just looking at a few headlines. I've been away from the program for a few days, and there's a lot going on. There always is, every week it seems. There's something huge happening, something of great significance from a prophetic standpoint. This one comes from, I believe, the Telegraph in the UK. Yesterday, of course, marked the 10-year anniversary of the terrorist attack on London. You might remember that back in 2005 when the subway system was bombed by these terrorists, murdering 52 people, 52 Brits. And this headline here says, preacher who praised the 7/7 killings can't be deported. The article says, Britain is unable to deport an Al-Qaeda preacher who praised the July 7 bombings and inspired the group linked to the Tunisian beach killings. Here he was praising the attack on July 7, 2005. And he's inspired the group linked to that recent massacre in Tunisia. It says Hani al-Sabai, an Egyptian, receives thousands. Listen to this. He receives thousands of pounds in welfare benefits and lives in a large West London house owned by the Housing Commission. He's alleged to have played a part in the radicalization of young men in the area, including Mohammed Imwazi, the Islamic State killer known as Jihadi John. So he's inspired Jihadi John. You remember him. He's the one on all these videos preaching for ISIS before he then beheads the captives, the infidels. And the man who inspired him has free housing in London, thousands of pounds to spend, provided by the UK government. That's the state of Britain today, Great Britain today, in an interview back in 2005, this man told Al Jazeera, if Al-Qaeda indeed carried out this act, he's talking about the July 7 bombings of the London Tube, if Al-Qaeda indeed carried out this attack, it is a great victory for it. It rubbed the noses of the world's eight most powerful countries in the mud. That's the man who has a free house in London, provided by Britain's government. The Telegraph piece goes on and says, in May 2012, Mr. Sabai delivered a video address from London to a conference organized by Ansar al-Sharia in Tunisia, the group believed to have radicalized Sefadin Rezgi, the gunman who killed 38 people in Tunisia. And as we talked about last week, most of the victims in that attack were Brits. They were from Britain. Mr. Sabai, 54, has been a resident in Britain since the mid-1990s when he fled Egypt. Notice this. He fled Egypt where he was wanted as a suspected member of Egyptian Islamic Jihad, the group set up by Ayman al-Zawahiri, the Al-Qaeda leader. He's too radical for Egypt. He's too radical for Egypt. In Britain, however, he fits right in. In Britain, he receives free housing. In Britain, he receives thousands of pounds from the government, from the welfare system. In Britain, he has protection. In Britain, the government protects his rights. It says a number of attempts to deport Mr. Sabi have been made, but have failed because he has argued that it would be a breach of human rights. A breach of human rights law to send him to Egypt, where there's a strong likelihood that he would face torture. So Egypt wants to prosecute him. Egypt wants to lock him up. And the UK wants to get rid of him. But it can't. It can't get rid of this man who inspires terrorists, who applauds terrorist acts. One final quote here from the Telegraph. It says, since September 2005, Mr. Sabai has been listed on the UN Security Council list of individuals linked to Al-Qaeda and described as a known figure within extremist circles. He's a known extremist. He's inspired terrorists, this article says. The UN Security Council acknowledges this. The United Nations. It says, finally, the Security Council listing added, he uses an internet site and other media to support terrorist acts or activities undertaken by Al-Qaeda, as well as to maintain contact with a number of supporters around the world. So he's using those funds. He's using that equipment he has in London to support terrorist acts or activities. That's what the United Nations has reported. It's as if we're just enslaved by our deranged, politically correct policies. Here we are more concerned about protecting the so-called rights of individuals like this, even as his disciples travel the world looking for Westerners to murder. Britons and Americans in particular. Let me shift gears to this one. This is from Breitbart yesterday, July 7th. The title, illegal immigrant deported six times, charged in felony, hit and run of family that injured young children. This says a six-time deported illegal immigrant is charged in the felony hit and run of an Arizona mother and her two children. The man allegedly admitted to being high on marijuana while causing the severe lacerations to a five-year-old boy. It says this tragedy comes within 1 week of two separate incidents involving previously deported illegal immigrants allegedly murdering women in two U.S. states, California and Texas. You've seen the one most recently with that woman in California. gunned down by an illegal immigrant. I'll talk about that in just a second. This piece continues, the California case involved a young woman in San Francisco taking photos with her father on a pier when an illegal immigrant who had been deported 5 times prior allegedly murdered her. Says the Texas case involved an illegal immigrant who had been deported 4 times prior. Police say the man admitted to murdering his wife with a hammer. Now, we've been following this in recent weeks, in recent months, in fact. I'll refer you to Jeremiah Jacques' article, The Worst Prison Break in American History. He points out, this is in the August 2015 Trumpet magazine, by the way. If you're not a subscriber, make sure you go to thetrumpet.com to get a free subscription to the world's best magazine, the world's best news magazine, because it reports the news that is significant prophetically. If you're not a subscriber to the magazine or to the Trumpet Weekly, you need to be. You should be. Mr. Jacques in that article talked about thousands of these criminals being released and how that they've been convicted of violent crimes. This is not petty theft we're talking about. These are not misdemeanors. These are violent crimes like homicide and aggravated assault. In just 2013, 1 year, a couple of years ago, the releases of these criminals included 193 convicted murderers, 303 convicted kidnappers, and 426 who were convicted of sexual assault. And the United States is letting them go. They're free to enjoy the benefits, the many benefits of the American welfare state. They're free to roam the country, even though guilty, in some cases, of multiple felonies. Many of them are known gang members. Now back to that shooting in San Francisco. Notice what this man says at frontpage.com. The progressive policies that murdered Kate Steinle. This is from Front Page, July 6. Left-wingers in San Francisco should be hanging their heads in shame after their borderline seditious, destructive immigration policies allowed an illegal alien felon to murder a young woman randomly in broad daylight. It says, nor did gun control laws prevent Juan Francisco Lopez Sanchez, a 45-year-old illegal alien, deported 5 times to Mexico. So sent back, and then he came back to America. Sent back, and he came back. And this happened 5 times. And he kept returning to San Francisco because he knew that in that city, he'd receive a safe haven from the local government. He knew that he could roam freely. It says later, no motive has been established for the shooting, but Lopez Sanchez is a 5-time felon. An hour after the shooting, he was picked up by police roughly a mile away. It says, although this violent thug pulled the trigger, progressives, through the laws they have enacted, put this man on the streets, which allowed him to murder. Who can deny this? This is not one isolated case either, like Mr. Jacques brings out in his article. It's happening across the country. It says federal authorities had Lopez Sanchez in custody in March. In March, he was in jail after he was set free from a federal prison. It says they transferred him to San Francisco authorities because he was wanted by them on drug-related charges. The feds filed what's called an immigration detainer, requesting that the local authorities notify them before releasing the man. But San Francisco, notice this, San Francisco, home of the most militant leftists in America, refused the request because local policy forbids it. The prisoner, in effect, got a get-out-of-jail-free card from the left-wing Open Borders movement, which argues that keeping illegals in jail violates their constitutional rights. You see, it violates their rights. They need human rights protection. We have to protect the rights of these criminals. Never mind Kate Steinle's rights, who can't even walk along Pier 14 in peace. She gets gunned down. while walking along the pier with their parents. This article finally says this is how it works. Being wanted for violating immigration laws isn't enough in the eyes of progressives. So after they have served their local time, illegals go straight from their holding cells to the streets where they're free to murder, rape, and rob citizens of this country, complain about this policy, and risk being smeared as a racist. Yes, indeed. Look at what's happening to one presidential candidate who came out strong against illegal immigrants flooding this country. And somehow he's the bad guy. He's the racist. He's the one we need to criticize and ridicule. It's a shame this poor woman who was gunned down, her name's not going to have quite the staying power as some of the others that these liberal progressives have picked up and used to carry on with their cause, with their agenda. This article talks about dozens of other cities that happen to be run by liberal, progressive governments. And they're safe havens for these illegals. They're sanctuary cities. Let me go through one last article, just to zoom back a bit and look at the world at large. This is from Melanie Phillips in the Times, July 6th. She says, the unthinkable is poised to occur. This is the week when the U.S. may pave the way for Iran to build a nuclear bomb. In this article, Phillips talks about how the president, the U.S. president, just keeps moving the goalposts in order to get this deal done. I saw a video just yesterday with all these statements, these strong statements, talking about how they had to stop building missiles, and obviously they had to stop enriching uranium. They had to open up everything wide open for inspectors. They wouldn't get sanctions relief until after such and such time. And on all these points, the United States has capitulated. It's surrendered to Iran, just like Melanie Phillips brings out here. She writes, President Obama initially pledged that unfettered inspection of Iran's nuclear facilities by the International Atomic Energy Authority was an absolute requirement. Iran said it would allow no such inspections. The U.S. now says there is a need only for negotiated access to some facilities. The U.S. promised sanctions would snap back should Tehran violate the agreement. Now it says this would depend on a majority vote among the P5 plus one. Phillips says, how, though, would they know of such violations if Iran can hide them from inspection? Moreover, since it has refused to answer virtually all the IAEA's questions since 2006, the authority would have no benchmark of past activity from which to calibrate any development of Iran's illicit nuclear program. Faced with evidence of Iranian cheating, the U.S. just moves the goalposts. She goes on and talks about how this administration, the Obama administration, has been determined from the beginning to make a deal with Iran at any cost, at any cost. And as she points out, it's not even a deal. It's a capitulation on the part of the United States, on the part of the UK. It's a capitulation that puts everyone in the world in grave danger. Here, Iran is the number one terrorist sponsoring nation in the world. It's declared war on the West from the beginning, back in 1979. It's behind all these attacks against Western interests. It's killed all kinds of U.S. soldiers, U.K. soldiers. It's developing these missiles to eventually carry nuclear bombs, expanding their range to reach Europe. It's behind so much of what's happening in the Middle East, all the turmoil, all the chaos. And when it suits its needs, it happily allies with Al-Qaeda, even ISIS. But we need to protect their rights as well, the thinking goes. We need to make sure that they can enrich uranium like other nations. That's the thinking among liberal progressives. In too many cases, Phillips says, researcher Thomas Jocelyn has documented for the American Claremont Institute how links Iran forged in Sudan in the 1990s played an integral part in al-Qaeda's rise. It says using Iran against ISIS in Syria and Iraq is also a terrible mistake. This is Phillips writing. She says Iran's unwavering strategy is to foment strife in the region so it can extend its own influence. For that reason, it previously backed the ISIS precursor, al-Qaeda, in Iraq. Now Iran is using its role in fighting ISIS to consolidate its own power there. According to Iranian human rights activist Amir Basiri, Iran-backed militias in Iraq are committing atrocities in Sunni townships and villages, thus alienating the Sunni population, who are crucial to defeating ISIS. It says, astonishingly, Obama believes that ending sanctions against Iran will transform it into a responsible global player. On the contrary, realizing that the Obama administration will never use force against it has already emboldened Iran to widen its deadly grip on the region in Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Yemen, and Gaza. She says, finally, in Britain, the indifference towards the P5 plus one capitulation is deeply disturbing. People shudder at ISIS. Notice this. We've talked about this often on this program. You've heard about it on the Key of David program here in the States. My father's talked about the greatest threat coming out of that region. She says people shudder at ISIS, but the threat from the Iranian regime, dominated by apocalyptic Islamists who have been attacking the West for the past three decades, is far greater. The threat coming from Iran, the prophesied king of the South. It's talked about in Daniel chapter 11. That threat is far greater than anything, than any movement in Syria with ISIS, as dangerous as that organization is. Think about that organization, ISIS, for example, if it had nukes. That's what Iran wants. That's what its apocalyptic leaders want. She concludes, President Obama believes that with this deal, he'll be thanked for having introduced an enlightened new Middle East order, it says. On the contrary, he will go down in history as the man who betrayed the West to its enemies and made a truly terrible war inevitable. That's what's inevitable here, a terrible war, a truly terrible war. And she adds, where is the British government as this debacle unfolds? Why, meekly tagging along on President Obama's coattails. Weakness. You see, weakness. Britain can't even get rid of a proud terror supporter in London. The United States can't do a thing about all the illegals roaming the nation. In fact, the government helps them by giving them get-out-of-jail-free cards. And here we are as a nation, together with Britain and others, helping Iran with their nuclear program, emboldening Iran in its agenda. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. Of course, the live stream. You can get that anywhere in the world as long as you have internet access. You can even get it 30,000 miles in the air. That's kpcg.fm. Email us your feedback at td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Greetings, I'm Ryan Malone, and our next episode of Music for Life is packed. In it, we will explore the inspiring connections between the universe, mathematics, and music. We also have two special interviews. In Classroom Corner, we talk with a renowned math professor about math's connection with music.
At every stage of the musical experience, there's mathematics hiding there.
And in our segment, Backstage Banter, we discuss the numbers and nuances of tuning with Peter Krause, the technician who preps the Steinways for the famous pianists who perform in the region.
If I move this note a couple of hundredths of a cent, it changes into something transcendent. It makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck when I find it.
Don't miss our next episode of Music for Life, The Harmony of the Heavens.
This Monday at 4 p.m. Central on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm.
Is prophecy real? Is it anything more than a collection of imaginations, vagaries, and wishful thinking? The answer is no. Human beings have never dreamed up an authentic prediction of the future. The human mind simply isn't capable of it. Such a feat would require godlike power. What about Bible prophecy? Is Bible prophecy real? Is it different than the litany of other failed prophecies that have been discarded throughout human history? Unlike other books, particularly those books that claim to predict the future, the Bible has endured for thousands of years. Something about this book has transcended thousands of generations of human history. And this book, the Holy Bible, claims to predict the future. It claims its prophecies come not from the minds of human beings, but from the mind of their Creator, from the mind of God. Prove the Bible's prophecies for yourself. If you cannot honestly prove them to be true, discard the Bible and move on with your life. But if you can, what a spectacular book the Bible becomes. Request Herbert W. Armstrong's free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. This book will examine the core Bible prophecies and compare them to history and current events. More than 6 million people have requested this amazing and easy-to-read book. Order The United States and Britain in Prophecy by Herbert W. Armstrong and prove Bible prophecy for yourself. The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back. Just want to follow up on that story from over the weekend after just reading more about it, the killing in San Francisco. It made me think of what my father wrote back in 2006 about those midterm elections when really the hard left came to power there in Congress after those 2006 midterm elections. And my father talked about it being a disaster for America. The article appeared in the Trumpet magazine, January 2007. He said, November's midterm elections marked a disaster in American history. It says, he talked about how the president at the time, George W. Bush, he had won two presidential elections by razor-thin margins, and how that the Republicans had dominated both chambers of Congress for 12 years. But all of that changed, and dramatically so, in 2006, November 2006. It says in the run-up to the elections, it seemed that nearly every critical race could go either way. But on election day, the Democrats made virtually a clean sweep. He said, God may well have had a hand in these results. You don't need deep biblical understanding to realize that something is dreadfully wrong in this country. My father said, times have never been more dangerous for America. We face wars on multiple fronts. And he says, do you think a government dominated by anti-war politicians can save America from its enemies? Think about how applicable this article is to where we are right now, today. It says the election of the Democrats, I believe, reveals the desperate lack of will in our people more than any other single event. That's an important point to make, because it's easy to point the finger at this political party or that political party or this leader or this candidate. But the problem is with the people. The problem is with our sins. That's where the problem is. He says, time will prove this to be a deadly curse on the United States. Now, that was written, as I say, in late 2006. In these elections, the United States surrendered to Iran and the terrorists. That was written in late 2006. Surrender. Capitulation. That's what this so-called deal is that the United States is working on with Iran. Finally, it says here, Democrats are excited by the fact that endorsements of San Francisco values now echo through Washington's halls. San Francisco values. That's what this is about. It's because of San Francisco values that this illegal alien was let loose. It's why he killed that poor woman last week. It says San Francisco values will now permeate every major decision made by the American government. And keep in mind, I mean, America's getting what a majority in America has voted for. Whether you look at those 2006 elections or the presidential elections that followed. Let's look at Isaiah 32. I want to go through a few scriptures, a few verses from this particular chapter, and just ask you about what God thinks. What must God think about San Francisco values? What does he think about protecting criminals in the name of liberalism? What does God think about our nations empowering its enemies? Nations that vow to destroy us. It says here in Isaiah 32, in verse 1, behold, a king shall reign in righteousness, and princes shall rule in judgment. These first few verses here in Isaiah 32, it's talking about the end time, the time just before Jesus Christ's return. This king that shall reign in righteousness. But before he comes, before he returns, there are some terrible things that are going to happen on this earth. A truly terrible war, as Melanie Phillips said, is coming. Verse 2, and man shall be as an hiding place from the wind, and a covert from the tempest, as rivers of water in a dry place, as the shadow of a great rock in a weary land, and the eyes of them that see shall not be dim, and the ears of them that hear shall hearken. The heart also of the rash shall understand knowledge, and the tongue of the stammerers, it says, shall be ready to speak plainly. See, that's really what this work is about, this work that supports KPCG, this work that so many young people are involved in and support at our camps, at the college. It's about delivering God's message to this dying world and doing it with simplicity and with plainness and doing it with power and effectiveness. Doing it with energy and emotion. Notice verse 5, it says, the vile person shall no more be called liberal, nor the churl, it says, said to be bountiful. The vile person, God says, shall no more be called liberal. That word liberal, it used to have a positive meaning. It used to refer to something that was noble or generous. I mean, if you were liberal, you were generous. You were giving. You were unselfish. But look at that label today. At least the way God sees it. He says here that it's vile. I mean, hard left liberals today have some of the most vile beliefs that you could imagine. Distorted, upside down, perverse. It's because of liberal policies that criminals are let go. It's because of liberal policies that criminals can't be escorted out of your country. And because of this, the United States and Britain, our nations, are decaying. We're withering away like a dying flower. We're rotting from within. We've lost the will to fight for our survival. Isaiah 5 and verse 20 says, "Woe unto them that call evil good, and good evil, that put darkness for light, and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet, and sweet for bitter. Woe unto them that turn the world upside down, that call evil or sin good, and that call righteousness or good evil." That's the world today. That's the world today, which is why we've got to be constantly on guard and vigilant to guard against accepting man's standards for conduct, man's policies for living, man's lifestyle. What does God think? What does God say? Verse 6, "For the vile person will speak villainy," it says, "and his heart will work iniquity to practice hypocrisy and to utter error against the Lord, to make empty the soul of the hungry, and he will cause the drink of the thirsty to fail." Jacinius' Lexicon defines villainy here as a shameful act of wickedness. Things like rape, murder, that kind of behavior. And God here likens the vile views and beliefs of prominent leaders to some of the most hideous acts of conduct. I mean, who is to blame? Like that article brought out, the front page article I quoted from in the first segment. I mean, if it's the policies that let these criminals go, who's really the cause of the murder? Well, you can even go beyond the leaders themselves and know that there's a spirit behind all these acts, these massacres, these murders, this crime and violence. There is a real spirit world, as we've talked about in a program recently. Verse 8, I'll read this in the Revised Standard Version. It says, "But he who is noble devises noble things, and by noble things he stands." See, a true liberal, the way God views liberal, the meaning of that word, is one who's seeking to live according to God's standards of nobility and goodness, God's standards of law and government. Godly beliefs, in fact, are the foundation of true liberalism. Verse 9, "Rise up, you women that are at ease. Hear my voice, you careless daughters. Give ear unto my speech. Many days and years shall you be troubled, you careless women, for the vintage shall fail, the gathering shall not come." See, liberalism in the world, it's just basically promoting sin. Liberalism, the way the world views it, the way man views it, is to excuse the worst kind of behavior. It's to empower Islamists, radicals. It's to let criminals go. It's to let criminals roam freely with guns. Back up to Isaiah 30. Just look at chapter 30 and verse 8. We've quoted from this often. Verse 8 says, "Now go, write it before them in a table and note it in a book. that it may be for the time to come forever and ever. God said to Isaiah, you put this down on paper. You write it in a book because it's for the latter days. Notice what my father had to say in the booklet, Isaiah's End Time Vision. He said, God is going to teach his truth to the whole world. What a wonderful future for God's true Christians today. We're being trained to teach the whole world. We'll be at center stage, not in a corner anymore. You can see that in verse 20. That's what he's referring to there. About God training teachers in his church, at his college, at his camps, to teach the world true values, God's values, not San Francisco values. He says we're going to teach the world what God taught us through Mr. Armstrong. And a great deal more. God's colleges will be established all over the world. Multiple millions of churches will be established. We're going to fill this earth with God's truth. That's what's happening. It's already started on this very campus, right here in Edmond, Oklahoma. You look at the campuses Mr. Armstrong raised up in Pasadena, in Big Sandy, at Brickett Wood in England. And the college motto during his day was to recapture true values. You've got to recapture these values of God, the teachings of God, and then hold on to them for dear life and not let them go and not lose your love for God's truth. So many people have, even those that had the truth. I mean, none of those colleges even exist today, the ones that Mr. Armstrong raised up, because evil, vile men came along after he died and destroyed that work and turned the truth of God into a lie and started calling evil good and good evil. Down in verse 10, which say to the seers, see not, and to the prophets, prophesy not unto us right things, speak unto us smooth things, prophesy deceits. That's what many of God's people, that's what many of them said after Mr. Armstrong died. Just give us a smooth message. And if bad things happen, if horrific things happen, we can just turn a blind eye to it and continue on living in a fantasy. My father wrote in the booklet, this lukewarm attitude causes the most enthralling prophecy of all to grow dim in the minds, in their minds, the prophecy of the beautiful world to come. See, that's what we want to set our minds on. Is there beauty in this world today? Well, many of those that would promote San Francisco values would say yes. But look at that city. I mean, I read an article just the other day just about the stench and the garbage of that city. This city that's supposedly beautiful, that we celebrate. And now killers are roaming the streets. Whose values are we here to support, to uphold, to promote? Down in verse 25 it says, and there shall be upon every high mountain and upon every high hill rivers and streams of waters in the day of the great slaughter when the towers fall. See, God is saying that those deceitful messages and false doctrine, they're about to collapse. They're about to become a thing of the past. And what's it to be replaced with? Verse 26, moreover, the light of the moon shall be as the light of the sun, and the light of the sun shall be sevenfold as the light of 7 days. In the day that the Lord binds up the breach of his people and heals the stroke of their wound. This is talking about the brightness of spiritual light. That's what Jesus Christ will soon bring to this world. And unless that light fills our lives today, we will descend into darkness. It's natural to let down, to give in, to capitulate. Which is why we have to be constantly vigilant and relentless in the way we hold on to the truth and teach it to our youths, to our young people. I read at the start what Mr. Armstrong thought about these youth programs and how valuable they are in supporting God's end-time work. Notice what he said in 1984. He writes, "I want to say more about these summer SEP camps, the entire youth program. I want you to realize," he says, "what an important part of God's work this is. Our great commission is to teach all nations. Teach Christ's gospel of the kingdom of God. The kingdom of God is the family of God into which God's church shall be born. God himself is a family. The God family. These are children of members of God's church. They have access to Christ, whereas those of the world do not. God's tithe money," he says, "which you pay," he's talking to the brethren of the church, "goes primarily for preaching and teaching the gospel of all those we can reach. These youths, of those already in the church, are by far the most important." I feel you never realized that before. That's the most important group we can reach, these young people. And here they are coming in from all over the world, as I said at the start. It was such a small beginning back in 1991. At our first PYC, I'm sure it was just as small for SEP, way back when that camp started in the 50s or 60s. Let's just conclude over in Psalm 127. It's a small beginning. It's a small beginning for God's work, God's church, God's school, God's camp. But we've got to see where this is leading. That's why it's experiencing this work. That's why it's experiencing the kind of growth that it is. Psalm 127 in verse 1, it says, "Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman wakes, but in vain." See, God has to do the building. And if God does the building, it will continue to grow. That's why Jesus says, judge by fruits. Judge by the growth. This is real progress. This is what we're talking about. God's perspective, God's view of progressive or liberal. He wants to spread this way of life all over the world. This is our 22nd year for summer youth program, the camps. Verse 2, it says, "It's vain for you to rise up early and to sit up late to eat bread of sorrows, for so he gives his beloved sleep," it says. "Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward." Children are an heritage of the Lord. That's our heritage. That's our legacy. That's what we leave behind, and that's our future. That's how God builds. It all gets back to family. It all gets back to education. If God's doing the building, you can be sure it's not only going to grow, but it's going to remain. It's going to remain forever. That's what we have here on KPCG, on this campus, at God's college, at God's camps. This work is destined for unlimited growth and greatness. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. And also the live stream is available at kpcg.fm. Send us your feedback, if you will, to td@kpcg.fm. At the top of the hour, of course, we have the headlines. And then after that, Joel Hilliker will be hosting the Trumpet Hour, so make sure that you stay tuned for another hour of power. Thank you for listening today, and we'll see you tomorrow.